All right, listeners, welcome back to Matt Goes to the Movies. Rob and I are here to talk about Ghostbusters 2, getting ready for the release of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And, you know, Rob, we mentioned on the last episode where we reviewed Ghostbusters, well, not the last episode, but when we reviewed Ghostbusters, that, you know, I remembered Ghostbusters 2. Probably seen it more than the original Ghostbusters, but man, let me tell you, 1984 is when the original came out. Huge hit, highly successful. I was not aware, 5 years later, 1989, Ghostbusters 2 comes out, but rewatching it and doing research, I was not aware of the absolute just chaos that it was to get this movie done. And I don't know if you know about all of that, but man, this thing, which should have seemed like a slam dunk, which it kind of was, that they wanted to get a sequel, but the amount of things that happened in between that time for this to come out is absolutely fascinating to me. This faced such a struggle to get made that I couldn't stop reading about some of the issues. Does that make it, you know, does it still hold up as well as I remember? That's what we're here to talk about. And really, you and I have never talked about this movie, so I'm really curious to get your thoughts on it. But there's a lot of fascinating stuff here.
Yeah, there's some reshoots that had to happen for some poor screening tests or test screening results, I guess. What's interesting is that, you know, we kind of feel like these first two movies are just iconic. We kind of almost look at them as unimpeachable if you just sort of casually bring them up to somebody, because people like the goofiness, the fun. They like the song. They like, you know, the proton packs and the jumpsuits and Ecto-1 and all that, and Slimer and you know, the toys. And we remember all of that fondly. It was interesting to realize that the studio didn't really see this as a success and completely submarined any chances of a third one. And it took, you know, it basically took until they made a video game out of it before the ideas that they had for the third film were able to be acted on.
Called it a franchise killer, this one.
Called Which it's not. Like, it's not bad.
No, called it a franchise killer with this movie. Now, again, is it as good as the first one? I think that's up for debate. I think there's some things that work really well in this movie. I do think, knowing what I know now today, there's certainly some spots where you can see, like, oh, I can kind of see where the movie falls apart a little bit. And it loses some of its footing. Reading the behind the scenes stuff and what audiences said to test screenings, I can see some of that. But to call this, and it certainly, if you go and look, it does have some very poor reviews for this movie. But a franchise killer, I mean, you can't argue with the fact that another one didn't come out until 2016. So you can't argue with that. But in my eyes, this in no way is a franchise killer. In fact, I had very strong feelings when this movie first started. It was like, this is funny. This has everything that I wanted. This has everything that I remember in a Ghostbusters movie. And again, I was just really, really surprised to read some of the stuff that I did. Now, there's some faults, but to call this a franchise killer, I'm really shocked by that, because I do feel this is a very, very strong entry for Ghostbusters. I feel this is a good movie. I did get enjoyment out of this.
I had a great time watching this movie. I think that there is one aspect of this film that it's kind of a big ask to get an audience member to just get over the idea. it is the elephant in the room, I believe, when it comes to this movie. And really, so many things that happen, so many scenes rely on this idea that it's, you really have to just be having fun with it and forgive it, because the movie wants you to believe that everything that happened in the last 5 years since the first film, people have forgotten about. Like, people like didn't believe or don't think the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that just walked around and dripped marshmallow everywhere, like, that didn't happen. Like, there's the scene with the judge where he doesn't believe in ghosts. What the hell do they think happened when these guys were so active? Like, they were on TV all the time with their ads. They were on the cover of Time magazine. They were on the cover of all of these magazines. There was one point they had so much work coming in that they were on the clock 24 hours a day, and they hired Winston on the spot in the last movie. They had so much work coming in. And so much of this movie is based on the fact that people don't believe that this stuff actually happened. And that is the single biggest, obvious, glaring problem that happens with this movie, that it makes you just ask the question, how did they think they were going to slip this past an audience? It is such a miss. I enjoy this movie so much. I had fun with this. But to ask an audience to just forgive this piece of it and just go with it and believe that could happen is a major, major issue with this film.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is, I think they do a really, well, I don't think, they do a really terrible job of explaining. And I think that's part of maybe the reshoots, or just some of the script changes, because of the fact that, like, when you look up this movie, you know, it's not only the fact that it's like, okay, they, you know, yes, there's some people that don't believe them. There's some people that, you know, they're called a fraud and things like that. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, how are you called a fraud? But then there's other people who are like, well, yeah, you're the Ghostbusters, but whatever. And the way that the description of this movie is, you know, and this could have been something to really, like, explore, and that would have been cool. But it doesn't do a good time frame of really saying how long it's been since the Ghostbusters, you know, from Ghostbusters 1 to 2, because it was 5 years for the movies to release. But Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, the movie never specifies that they actually treat the time frame between 1 and 2 as the actual timeline for the movie. It's been 5 years in New York City since the Ghostbusters actually saved it.
I thought I saw a title card at the beginning that said 5 years later. I thought they had something.
Okay, maybe I missed that. I feel like, and maybe that's a you blink and you miss it moment, and people didn't pick up on that.
You were refilling your Ecto Cooler Hi-C.
Right, there you go. But also, too, they don't really point out the fact, unless I missed this as well, which I don't think I did, the city, like, sued the Ghostbusters. Like, people sued the Ghostbusters for property damage and things like that. And they were actually, like, they were barred from doing any investigating. Like, that's not made a point in the movie at all, which could have been a great addition.
It really isn't. I think it's maybe slightly alluded to. Like, if you read between the lines, you really only get that if you start doing reading about this movie or looking at synopsis and things like that. It's not expressly stated in the movie. You have to look elsewhere to really get that. And honestly, it doesn't really make sense, because would the city just have rather them do nothing and just let the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and, you know, Zool just take over? Like, that was better. Like, you know, all of the places that were being haunted and things like that, that was better for them. Like, what?
You know what, Rob? We laugh, but look at the way New York City is run, and probably the answer is yes.
Like, yeah, it would be an improvement at this point.
Like, you know, but, you know, starting off again, because maybe the time frame is weird, again, there's that question of, like, okay, they're doing birthday parties for the kids, but the kids don't really like the Ghostbusters. Buster's like, wait a minute, what? How are these kids not just going crazy over the Ghostbusters? But because it's so, you know, it's so vague as to the time frame and what has actually happened to the Ghostbusters, there is some questions. But, you know, then you get in, and again, even when this movie started and we get introduced back to Dana and things like that, there's some really funny moments. And, you know, the stuff with her and Peter Venkman when they first go to the apartment, it's funny. Like, it's very casual and very subtle, but like, I'm like, yeah, there's humor here. There's good humor. He's not a freaking pervert and a creep right now. Like, they have, like, it seems like they have a general, like, a genuine connection. And when he's like, I'll tell you what, when they're looking at the baby because they're going to investigate because there was the paranormal activity, and Peter's like, he's ugly. Was his father ugly? Did his father stink too? Like, it's funny because they don't overdo it. It's just, it's one line. They move on. She doesn't like acknowledge him, and like, she just kind of ignores it. It's like, no, that's actually funny. Like, this movie actually starts off pretty strong, and it doesn't taper off until a little bit later, but this movie has a very strong start. I thought it,
I agree. And I think that when Venkman and Dana are kind of having that little exchange back and forth, you get the feeling that there are unresolved feelings that they both have for one another. And that sense of what could have been, you know, mm-hmm. they both wish that it would have ended differently, or that they would have done something differently. You definitely get that feeling that is present in that scene, and it's really effective. And, you know, again, watching these guys, you know, having to do birthday parties and the kids calling them frauds, it's just like, okay, kid, you were definitely old enough to remember when they were like working around the clock, exterminating ghosts the way that, you know, current like exterminators in New York City do with rats. Like, nobody would doubt that the rat exterminator exists. Like, these guys were doing that. And there was a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, like, walking down the center of town that exploded.
Well,
and
you know what?
And try to pretend that didn't exist.
Cell phones. Nobody could record it, really.
I know this was before YouTube, but seriously, like, you know, like, again, I just keep coming back to that. There's multiple scenes that rely on people doubting that these guys are actually experts in their field and have saved the city and possibly all of humanity for all we know. It's really a major, major problem, and it's hard to get over, except that you're kind of just having fun with this, mm-hmm. these characters and these guys.
Do you know where they missed a major crossover here? I just thought about this.
Ooh, what?
Men in Black.
Ugh, yeah.
They wipe the city, man. Like, the Ghostbusters, yeah, and Men in Black exist in the same universe.
It's headcanon now.
Yep, headcanon. But, and, you know, one of the things, too, that was a big criticism of this movie, and still is the main villain, Viggo. Not really intimidating, not a challenge. I did find it funny that doing research that the person who originally voiced Viggo found out when he went to the release that his voice was dubbed over by another actor, and he didn't know that, and he stormed the frig out of the premiere.
Wow.
But I guess it was so hard. He said he made comments of this, that he had some sort of a busted lip that caused his speech to be very, very hard to hear. And they had, they almost had the same exact name. It's very funny if you go research it, but never told him. They still paid him, but never told him that he got voiced over, and found out in the premiere when he was watching the movie that he got cut.
That's like finding out you got traded on Twitter, you know, right? If you're a professional athlete and having to find out like that.
So I found that kind of funny, but, you know, yeah, let's face it, not, you know, not the strongest villain. I don't think, really, when you go back and you watch Ghostbusters 1, they're like, oh, he wasn't really that difficult for the Ghostbusters to defeat. It really kind of follows the same pattern as Ghostbusters 1. It's not like they had to put up much more of a fight against Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and, you know, what's it called? Dozer.
Zool.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, yeah, Zool. Well, yeah. And, right. But I just, that part, I'm like, okay, like maybe he wasn't as interesting, but I certainly don't feel like they put up any more of a fight, especially watching these movies so close together. I don't know. Did you feel that? Like, it felt like it was
100% had the same takeaway. We didn't really get into it with the first review, but I really did feel like the main boss fight was somewhat anticlimactic in the fact that, like, oh, we just crossed the streams and now we'll, and now that's going to fix all our problems. Like, that sort of was a weak point. And, yeah. And to a large extent, I felt like the kind of the final battle here also was a bit anticlimactic. And, you know, we didn't really, like, our heroes weren't overly tested. There was no, you know, real threat, I guess. Perhaps it was a function of the limitations of visual effects that, right, they couldn't do an all-out brawl the way you would probably expect to happen in a film today. They were kind of limited with what they had to work with for a supernatural character to before it really stretched credulity. But it did still feel anticlimactic in both cases.
Yeah, absolutely. It really did. Like you said, I mean, what could you do to make that, you know, more interesting? But I did really like, you know, Janos. I did like Viggo's sort of, what's the handler, if you want to call him that. I did find it really funny. It's towards the end of the movie. I actually really laughed at this because I was like, yeah, you'd kind of feel like characters would feel the same way. He's sitting there in like the pentagram circle and Viggo's talking to him and he's like, Viggo is like, yes, I like, and it's, he says it very low. So it's like, you could kind of miss it if you're not paying attention to the movie for a second. But I love how he's like, yes, I know, I've heard it. You like, cause he repeats the same thing every time he talks to him and he's just kind of over it. He's like, just, all right, tell me what you want me to do. You don't have to tell me that you ruled the world in 1800 or like all this other stuff. Like, I found that really funny, actually.
It is a funny moment. And it also occurs to me that in this universe, Sigourney Weaver only seems to have men populate around her that are creepy. Like,
right.
It just seems like every man she comes into contact with all of a sudden just is a creeper. And it's just, I feel bad for her character, honestly.
Right. Yeah, no, it's like, geez almighty. But I did find his character, like, I found his character kind of funny because, again, I found that was very realistic that, you know, you've had that and you probably know people like that where you're like, yeah, I know. Like, you've told me this. Like,
get to the point.
Yeah, like, oh, geez. Like, I don't mean to be rude, but, oh, my God. Like, did you actually forget that you told me? Or, like, what? Like, but. So I found that funny. And, again, there's little, you know, there's other lines, too, where I'm like, yeah, this movie still retains very good humor. You know, the court scene where, you know, the ghosts pop out. And it's like, one, though, I'm sorry. The judge doesn't see that frickin' ectoplasm start frickin' bubbling like it's on a stove. Like, give me a break. Like, you're looking in the direction of the Ghostbusters where the frickin' slime is. There's no way.
There's so much wind blowing through there. Right. You could almost start a tornado.
Like, there's no way you're not seeing that. But he's like, just do something. And then he's like, no. He's like, my clients, like, that would be exposing themselves. And then there's Peter. It's like the line, yes, it's true. This man has no dick. Like, he's like, and you don't want us exposing ourselves. I'm like, no, this retains.
It was funny.
The humor. And again, I feel like it does sort of, you know, it falls apart. That's way too strong. It does lose some momentum getting towards the third act, especially because it becomes even more of a question of, like, when they first go to see the mayor and he's like, you, buddy, of all people, should be like, shit, if these guys have a hunch, I should probably listen to it. And I feel like it kind of, you know, starts to lose some steam, especially right there, in that moment, because you're right. It's like, I could see a couple of people, but because you're always going to have those, you're always going to have people like that. No matter what, if this life has taught us anything, there are people that you could walk up, slap them in the face, and they will deny it till the day they die. No, that never happened. What are you talking about? Like there are people like that. But when they came and he basically treats them like they're crazies off the street, that's where I'm like, really, buddy? Like, come on.
It's like they just completely forgot. And that's where, again, it's hard to praise the things this movie does well, because that courtroom scene, you're right, is hysterical. How does the judge say he doesn't believe in ghosts? I do enjoy this scene in the mayor's office. It's generally pretty funny. It's followed up by the scene in the psychiatric ward that's actually really funny. And I feel like it's a great encapsulation of what's great about this movie. And yet it still represents what is worst about the movie. Why would this medical staff not believe them? And why would they not immediately know who these guys are?
Right. It doesn't hold up. No, because the thing is, too, that courtroom scene is before they talk to the mayor. So how the hell does he not know that they just busted freaking ghosts in the courtroom? Yeah. That would be everywhere.
Yeah, even before, you know, TikTok and Instagram reels, I feel like the mayor would get a call. I feel like somebody would phone his office.
Well, that courtroom is basically destroyed. And more than likely, that courtroom is probably in the same giant goddamn building that the mayor's office is in.
Yeah.
It's probably in the same goddamn building, or it's on the same strip, at least in New York City. Those places are usually closer together. A courtroom of that size and that magnitude is usually pretty close to that.
Yeah. It's hard. Again, it stretches the credulity so much that you as an audience member kind of feel like your intelligence is being insulted, that they want you to believe that these characters are doing that. As soon as you have something weird, like the first time something kind of weird goes on, why are these guys just not immediately on retainer?
Right.
Like, hey guys, we got that thing again. Like, you know, why is their research not being funded?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Why are they doing children's parties as opposed to, like, building the next generation proton pack?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, that is part of, I mentioned this when we reviewed Ghostbusters 1, but that is, and again, it's just it's a crazy fan theory, but it's always fun to see some of these, but that is the fan theory that the reason this movie is the way that it is because the Ghostbusters are actually dead. And this is them in their own heads. Creating this. But again, that's like, that is one of the fan theories that's out there, is that the Ghostbusters actually died in that first movie, in that battle. That's why everybody treats them like they're crazy, because nobody, like, it's just a whole new thing.
I think some fan theories can be kind of fun, but this one feels like it falls into the, like, Jar Jar has secretly been a Sith the whole time, where, like, you have to come up with a fan theory to explain away something that's actually pretty awful.
Right. That should have been super easy. Now, one thing that I will say is I do like, and again, it's especially, and they wanted to dig more into it, and I would have really enjoyed that. But the idea, as many rewrites and things and chaos that this movie went through to get made, one of the main thoughts about this movie, and right from the beginning, was they wanted to explore the thought of the like negative emotions, and they wanted to have it across multiple cities. They actually wanted to make this out of New York. There were a lot of different treatments for it, but there was always the underscore of just the effect of negative people being around negative people and what the consequences are of that. I think that's a really interesting concept. It's even more relevant now in today's age. But I do like that. I thought that was, and I do, I think that's a good theory in the background here of this movie. Now, it's not as fleshed out as it probably could be, but I do like that as, you know, the undertone of the story is that's how these things are happening is because, you know, busy, 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 go, go, go. You're a piece of crap. I'm a piece of crap. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you cut over into my lane. That's going to cause my whole day to be freaking ruined. Like, you know, all of this negative stuff that will sit there and go, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it's like, okay, well, that took 10 seconds out of your day. Is that really that big of a deal? Like, everybody, and you know, I'm certainly that way sometimes now. Like, all right, everybody, let's just calm the hell down.
Yeah, we certainly live in a world where many people are only happy if they're angry. And that's kind of sad. You know, they live in these echo chambers where they only have their viewpoints reinforced and they only get their news from the propaganda machine that reinforces their worldview and keeps them angry about the other worldview that exists, not understanding that there's more than two options as far as like worldviews that a person can have. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy if you're the kind of person who wants to live in an us versus them kind of world, it's very easy right now to do that if you want to. And there's people who are only happy when they're angry. And it feels like, I don't know that you could make this movie with this sort of setup today because it would almost feel a little too on the nose. I think this would be divisive if this came out today.
I think you're very much right about that. But again, I'll stand by it. It's, you know, I think it's a very interesting concept that they did have for this. Now, you know, another thing too, the song Bobby Brown, Take Control, when that's like, there's a lot of good in this movie. And even when that song started playing, I was like, oh man, like, okay, like I'm back into it. Like I enjoy this movie. I don't understand. And again, maybe because I'm seeing it so far removed from when it first came out. I really don't understand the negativity towards this movie because I had a really good time with this. The Statue of Liberty. Now, I will say that I did doing research. There was a scene that was cut that actually explains how they learn how to manipulate the slime with positive thoughts and things like that. That really goes into and how they could control the Statue of Liberty. But I like that scene. I thought that scene was cool. I enjoyed it.
I mean, they controlled the Statue of Liberty with a Ness Advantage pad. I actually had one of those. It was awesome, especially for the 1942 and 1943 like aviation games. Like you pretty much needed that because it had the slow-mo button on it. And like that was the only way to get through some of those old games. Kids these days, they don't understand how hard video games used to be. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell anybody under the age of like 30 to just get off my lawn right now, just for a moment here, if I could. But like original Nintendo games were not always intended to be able to be beaten. Like they made all the levels, but you didn't always see them. In fact, you rarely beat original Nintendo era games. And that NES Advantage pad was like the only way you could do it because of the slow-mo button on it. So that's how they controlled it. You just plug that in. But you're right. It's, I did notice that. Like, how did they have the positive gel? Where did they get that from? Like, that was never really fleshed out. And just the whole concept of bringing the Statue of Liberty to life, in the hands of lesser filmmakers, this would have fallen absolutely flat. But here, it's just bonkers enough to make sense and be effective because it's fun.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But still, there was nothing in this movie that made me sit here and go, I would have ever said this was a franchise killer. Like, it really is just kind of crazy to me with everything that got sequels in between, like from then 1989 to 2016. To me, for this movie to sit there and not get anything until that, you know, remake, reboot, whatever you want to call it.
They've made 37 Fast and Furious movies just in that time span alone. They've rebooted Spider-Man 47 times and Batman 823 times. Like, and yet it took this long to get Ghostbusters back.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it was, it really is baffling to me that this didn't get after watching it. 'Cause again, I remember this movie well. There's certainly some things I was like, okay, yeah, I can see that after doing research. But again, at the end of the day, I had fun with this movie. There's nothing glaring that sits there and makes me go, oh man, this is bad.
Yeah, but I thoroughly enjoyed my watch earlier today. I watched it with my son and I just looked over, and when the credits started to roll, I said, hey, bud, you know, what did you think? He's like, oh, I really liked it. I said, well, what did you think compared to the first one? Because we had just seen it together, you know, last week. And he's like, yeah, probably wasn't as good, but I still really liked it. So that's, you know, tipping my hand a little bit. But yeah, that's where I'm at with this one.
Yeah, you know, the thing is too, with this, it did come out and they made mention of this, you know, Batman did come out as well. And they do make mention of the fact that people were, you know, maybe looking for something a little bit, maybe darker in tone. But you know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting in terms of like home video and stuff like that, when Ghostbusters came out on VHS, it was $90.
Oh my God. In today's money, that has to be at least $4,000 or $5,000.
It is insane. Like that, like, holy cow. I would like to see, I've never seen any deleted scenes from this movie or anything. And I know that they have them, on like the 4K release of it and everything like that. But, I would be interested to see some of the deleted scenes that are actually on that. But
yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure, but Rob, anything else that you have about, this movie before we head into popcorn time?
I have one final take on this movie before we rate it. And it's something that occurred to me, during my watch of this film earlier tonight. And quite simply, we really owe the Ghostbusters a lot. They were the first, as far as I can figure. And I thought about this all night. They were the first nerd superheroes that I could think of. They made it cool to be a nerd long before anybody else did. I mean, we've talked about this a lot on air, what the 2012 Avengers film meant, and things like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy, and how kind of like, you know, it's actually cool to play D&D now, where that was never always the case. Comic books are cool now in ways that they weren't always necessarily cool. Like Batman was cool. The Punisher was cool, but like Doctor Strange wasn't cool. Like, you know, there was Spider-Man was kind of cool. Superman was kind of cool, but like obscure characters, less popular characters are never cool. And way before all of this stuff was mainstream, the Ghostbusters were the original nerd superhero team. And I think we owe them a debt.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point. I like that a lot. They certainly were insanely popular. There is no doubt about it. Still are, you know, getting ready to release a brand new movie. One that I'm really looking forward to. Really looking forward to getting to review Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Answer the Call, to see where those movies stand. When Ghostbusters Afterlife came out, I was a huge, huge fan, had a lot of things to say about it to some friends. Really enjoyed it and really looking forward to getting a refresher on it and going back before the new one comes out. So let's go to popcorn time. Let's grab some buckets, and I will just go first. I do think there are some, like I said, there are some flaws with this movie. There's some things that could have been explained a lot better that would have made this, you know, not perfect, but right there with the first one. I think they get away from the fact that people, you know, doubt the Ghostbusters. I think you get away from that. I think maybe you still go with the plot that they were sued and they are, you know, I still think you could have gone with that. Like, you know, the city is so whatever, you know, you could have gotten, there was you could have done a lot of things rolled into that. There was a new mayor and the new mayor sued them because of the damage to the city and, you know, whatever else the case may be. I still think you could have kept certain elements, but explaining it better would have put this movie and more clearly defining the amount of time that had transpired from movie one to movie two, that would have put this right with the first movie. But they don't do that. Now, I still had a great time with this movie. I still think there's a lot of good humor. I still think there's a lot of good chemistry with the cast. And I give this movie 4 buckets.
Yeah, I'm not far off. I think it's not missing much to be equivalent to the first. It's not the first movie. It's not that far off either. I think there are some people that definitely can't ignore some of the issues, like, you know, again, trying to pretend like these major events didn't happen and everyone's all of a sudden now denying that those things happened. It is very bizarre because it's a central piece of multiple scenes in this movie that require you to believe that that's what's going on. So I think I went 4.75 for the first one. I'm at 4.25 for this. I enjoyed it. I would watch it again in the future. I will watch this again in the future. I had a good time watching it tonight. I anticipate each time I rewatch it, I will also have a good time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is one that I would watch. So, really glad. And coming up next will be Ghostbusters Answer the Call, one that, Rob, it'll be the first time that you have seen this. The second time that I have seen this movie. And we will see what our thoughts are. And maybe my thoughts have changed on this. So, listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. Make sure to click the show notes and figure out exactly how you can interact. But Rob, just in case, why don't you tell the listeners where they can go and interact with the show?
Listeners, you can find Matt Goes to the Movies everywhere you are on the internet. That place you downloaded this episode from, you know what you can do? You can go ahead and hit like and subscribe. You can give each episode an individual rating. You can also head over to podchaser.com and rate it where everybody can see it, regardless of the platform they are downloading it on. You can find Matt Goes to the Movies on your favorite social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of them. Everywhere you want to be, you can find Matt Goes to the Movies, YouTube even. You can certainly join the Facebook group. Some great discussion happens in there. You get to find out when new episodes drop. If you're not the kind of person that's just going to go ahead and subscribe, which, you know what? Go ahead and be that guy. Be that guy that subscribes to Matt Goes to the Movies. And also tell a friend while you're at it. Go ahead and be that guy too. You can also email the show, mgttmpodcast@gmail.com. Just the initials for Matt Goes to the Movies at podcast@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts. Send us your power rankings. Which Ghostbusters film? Rank them all. Tell us what you like. Tell us which ones were the bottom. We're happy to hear from you. And we love hearing from the listeners your thoughts on individual films or episodes as a whole.
Perfect. Absolutely. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. And we are going to be back very soon with more reviews.